This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Thank you for returning again this week to listen to another episode of this podcast. We thank you for returning week after week, and we particularly want to thank those who are friends of the Magic Word. This week, we welcome another friend of the Magic Word, Mr. Brent Lipp, who had sent us another nice note. We read one last week that was an email we got from a new friend. But Brent, I want to read just a couple of excerpts, and this was very nice from what he had said. Hello, thank you for your weekly podcast. As someone who attempts to encourage other magicians and performers, your podcasts have encouraged me. Although I am retired, my goal is still to perform whenever I can. Back in the 60s, I remember Mark Wilson's Magic Land of Alakazam and wanted to learn to perform illusions. When my first, all early, ones failed, magic was put on the back burner. Saying, I give up can be the easiest thing to say, but also the most regrettable. He goes on to talk a little bit about what he had done in his career, becoming a pastor and doing gospel magic, and then goes on to say that now that he's retired last year, I got to perform more places than I have in the past. Encouragement is something everybody needs. Through social media, I have been able to chat with different illusionists and attempt to say something positive and encouraging. Since I have been listening to The Magic Word, the tone of your voice has been comforting, and the positive attitude of those you interviewed has been a great comfort to me. I've been a fan of Jody Barron for several years, and when I heard him on one of your podcasts, I sent him a Facebook message saying how much I enjoyed your talk. While I was driving to get my wife back from work, I had to stop and answer the phone. Usually, I'm a little bit hesitant and reluctant whenever there's a number I don't recognize on my phone, but I answered anyway. And when he introduced himself as Jody Barron, we had a wonderful conversation and discussing Chicago and Midwestern roots, etc. So he also shares his magic words and says, in case you haven't figured out, my magic word is two phrases, don't give up. And he says, see Jimmy V's ESPY speech. And what I close my messages with, trust God and you're loved. Thank you, Brent, very much for your words, and I appreciate you listening. And those are the kinds of emails and comments I just touch my heart, and I appreciate each and every one of you fellow listeners out there, and also for what you have done in helping to make the Magic Word grow by leaving your five-star reviews on iTunes and elsewhere. I had made mention of that recently, and many of you answered the call and went out and did just that. If you have not yet done that, it would be very appreciative because it helps this podcast to grow and lets the rest of the world know about the Magic Word Podcast, particularly the magic community. If you haven't yet shared these podcasts on your social media, please do. And if you haven't yet told your other magician friends about this podcast, please do that as well. Well, enough for all of that promotion, and I thank you very much for going through that. And again, welcome Brent to the Friends of the Magic Word. A couple of other things I want to bring up of note. One is we have a new contest that's going to begin running this week and will run for 3 weeks. Typically, it runs for 2 weeks, but we have several prizes to give away and giving you several opportunities to win these prizes. So if you wait until the end of this podcast, we will give you information on the contest and where you can go to enter for a chance to win. One other thing, too, is since we are going to be talking this week a lot about magic theaters, I recently, at the request or suggestion of one of the listeners, was to post another page on the MagicWordPodcast.com, and that is magic theaters. And so if you're traveling someplace in the U.S. or around the world, there are as many theaters as I know of, I have been put there. There are the cities, the states, the countries, as well as the name of the club and the website where you can go for more information. And if your club or your theater is not listed, please send me an email, scott@themagicwordpodcast.com, and I'll be glad to add that to it as well. But if you go to our website, you can see a tab where it'll say Magic Theaters and click on that. So if you're traveling, this might be a good opportunity or a good place for you to use as a way of searching for magic theaters in your next destination. Well, as I said, this week we're going to be talking about magic theaters and more. We're going to be visiting with Ryan and Chris Zubrick, who are the gentlemen who have recently opened their own theater, the Zubrick Theater in St. Petersburg, Florida, near Tampa. and not only talking about the trials and tribulations of opening a theater, but also what they have done before in Saipan and in Guam, working with large cats and how they have evolved for their Las Vegas type of big showroom show with dancing girls, and as I said, large animals and everything then too, and scaling that down to a little bit smaller size where it's just the two of them plus one dancer and then someone else working in the front lobby. And anyhow, talking all about that, plus why they decided to settle in St. Petersburg, Florida, as opposed to anywhere else in the United States. Plus, they talk about their son and how he was born. This is quite an interesting story. I think you will enjoy. Their son was not adopted, but actually is physically their son. The two of them are married. And so I think you'll find this whole episode just chock full of a lot of really interesting stories and good facts if you would like to know more about the Zubrick Theater, as well as these two gentlemen as well. I've talked long enough. I'm going to let them do the talking from here on out. Please welcome my guests this week, Ryan and Chris Zubrick, here on The Magic Word. Today, we are in St. Petersburg, Florida, and it is beautiful weather here in, I guess this is late winter, in early February, and the weather is absolutely perfect, but then when you're indoors, it can be whatever temperature you want, which we were just talking about that. It's not, temperatures are very nice. We're in the Zubrick Theater, and I'm here then with Chris and Ryan Zubrick, and this is just wonderful. I've been wanting to talk with you guys for a while because Jonathan Levitt said I should talk with you guys also, and I love Jonathan. And aside from that, you guys have had a show and been superstars in Asia and come to the America, and it's like, zoo what? Zoo? I don't understand. So I want the world to know more about who you are, what you guys have accomplished, and why you've ended up over here. So we got a lot of stuff to cover, and I'm really, really excited. Please welcome my friend, Chris Zubrick. Chris?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you so much for having us on the podcast.
And then Ryan.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here, too. Actually, I'm glad to be here. This is a wonderful theater. We're in the Zubrick Theater in St. Petersburg, which is just kind of like a block off of like the main drag. Now, isn't that kind of like the main street? Like
Central Avenue, and we're on First Avenue North, which is just one block off Central.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like happening place, like
the main thoroughfare.
And you have adequate parking over here and everything, not valet parking? Or you
we have our own dedicated parking lot, which is very unusual to find in downtown St. Petersburg. Usually it's, you know, pay by the meter. And
Well, now, there are a lot of theaters that have been opening over the last several years leading up to and through the pandemic, in which we've got like a Chicago Magic Lounge, a Smoke and Mirrors Theater up in Philadelphia, and the House of Cards in Nashville, and other places just across the United States. This theater, we're going to talk more about the specifics of this in a minute, but why St. Petersburg?
Yeah, so we were overseas performing on the island of
Guam.
Maybe
we should back up.
Yeah, we should.
Because, this is not an interview. It's just a conversation. It kind of goes all over the board. So, yeah, you were, and that's why that you're not as well known, because you haven't been in America. You were overseas
13 years.
13 years.
Yeah, we originally started out as a two-year engagement,
and
we ended up staying for 13 years. We just loved it so much. We first moved out to the island of Saipan.
Now, I don't know where Saipan is. I mean, tell me geographically. Is that near Jakarta or someplace?
It's in
or?
A little speck in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Okay.
Yes. So we were there. We, like I said, initially went out for a two-year engagement. And
by who? I mean, who books that
kind
of
thing? It's called the Sandcastle Dinner Theater. It's its own freestanding theater on the island of Guam. That's the sister company. But the one in Saipan was connected or was housed inside of the Hyatt Regency Hotel. So,
yeah, we just found, I think we were on the Magic Cafe, and there was a posting about an opportunity overseas, and so we sent in our promotional stuff. We were just performing in the Michigan area. I was going to Michigan State University at the time, and so we sent our stuff in, didn't think anything would come of it, and then eventually the director of entertainment contacted us and said, hey, we're interested, and one thing led to another, and we signed a two-year contract, and then we ended up staying for 8 years on the island of Saipan, and then the Sandcastle Dinner Theater moved us to their sister company on Guam, where we stayed another 5 years. So, long time with the company, but it was great. We loved both islands.
So, was it a casino or?
No, just it's just a dinner theater.
Dinner theater.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Kind of like they got, I guess, in Hawaii, at some of those places then as well.
Yep, exactly, yeah. And we had a plethora of tourists. We have Chinese, Korean, Japanese, Filipino.
With the military bases on the island of Guam, we had an occasional, you know, American family that would come in, but it was mainly geared towards the tourists that were visiting the island.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is that a major tourist attraction for Americans or English-speaking people, or is it mainly kind of Asian?
Mainly Asian tourists. Okay. Just a sprinkling here and there of the Americans.
Did you learn some Chinese, Mandarin, or any kind
of... We did. We had to learn Japanese and Korean and a little bit of Chinese and Russian for the show.
Wow.
We just learned what we needed to know for the performance.
Right.
But you had to really gear it towards all nationalities, because you didn't know who was going to be in the audience.
Did you learn any jokes or something you would tell during the time?
No, nothing. Not really.
I mean, I thought maybe you could tell a joke like in Russian or something, you know, and everyone else would laugh, but we wouldn't know what you're saying. So,
Okay.
So you really didn't have a speaking show. I mean, it was really just all illusions.
It was visual. Yeah, okay. It was highly visual. It was a Las Vegas style show. So we had showgirls, we had six tigers.
Wow.
We had acrobats. We had a crew of 20. It was quite a production.
And the crew of 20, were they employed, I assume, by Sandcastle or by you?
Were.
In other words, did they give you X dollars and then you go out and get whatever, or how'd that deal work?
No, we were just hired as the headline entertainers. So the theater, they were in charge of the dancers, the acrobats, the Chinese acrobats, and then all of the crew. And all the crew was local. Mm-hmm. And there's not too many.
So they're Asian, local Asians, you mean, basically? Or were they people from the base?
No, they were from the island. So okay. Chamorro, Carolinian, Filipino. And we had, so on Saipan and Guam, there's not too many theaters, and a lot of these crew have never been off the island, so this was their first experience in a theater, so it was a really strong, great crew to work with.
Did they have other kinds of acts? Before you guys came in, did they have, like, something that ran for a long time, or they just have rotating singers or dancers, or they have, I don't suppose they had any other kind of Las Vegas type of show, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, the Sandcastle is notorious for magicians, and they opened...
Notorious may not be the right word. Well known for.
So Rick Thomas, Mark Palin and Ginger, Tim Cole, plenty of people have been
through
the
Sandcastle. So they
set
the pace as far as having wild animals.
Yes, yeah.
I know Rick used to work with those over there.
Yeah.
Interesting. So they did have a lot. And so they, again, were looking for a magician to kind of replace because one of the guys had left again?
Yeah, one of the guys was leaving his contract early. So we went there and took over his contract and just fell in love with it. We really enjoyed the island. It was paradise, absolute paradise.
Did you, well, where would you go for a vacation? I mean, when you talk about when you're living in paradise, where does one go on vacation?
You know, it was the doorstep to Asia. So we were 3.5 hours from Japan.
We could
easily go over to Korea. We went to Hong Kong, Macau.
New Zealand.
Yeah, it was great.
Was that during a time also, speaking of Macau, when Franz Rory had his show? Did you go and see
him? Yeah, we went over to see that. It was fantastic.
Never got a chance to see that. Who was working? Was Rocco or who was with it? Okay.
Rocco was there. Gosh, it was so long ago.
Yeah, I think Ayala was actually doing the main show at
Ayala,
that time.
Joaquin?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be just a gorgeous thing or place to be in a venue. As far as cruise ships, did you guys do cruises kind of before you kind of...
No, so before or shortly after we teamed up, we toured around the Midwest performing fundraising shows for nonprofit organizations, high schools, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So we were in a different venue every performance, which we enjoyed. So
like a phone room type of a thing that you would contact people and
just direct marketing. Yep.
Okay.
And when we got the sit-down gig in Saipan, it was great to just have all of our equipment in one place. We would literally be at the beach all day long and come off the beach with sand between our toes and go right on stage and perform. Like I said, we had that wonderful crew, so they pretty much set everything up for us, you know, prior to the show and did all of our presets, and we just go out there and perform, and it was a wonderful, wonderful contract.
So cruising wasn't something that was necessarily in your background or anything that would interest you because you're going to be having
Going on cruise ships for vacations, but we never had performed on them. We had thought, okay, maybe after our, engagement there in Sandcastle, we'd eventually get on a cruise ship. Well, then we had our son, Oliver, and cruising with a child is a little bit more difficult, so that never came to be. And, of course, the pandemic really shut down the cruise industry as well.
I've talked to some other cruise people who cruising careers, I guess, ended whenever they had a child. And, you know, maybe the wife would stay on, but it's like, I really don't want it to be gone. And then the two are separated. It's like, no, you know, and so they kind of get back together. You guys decided also, I guess, that was not really for you. Best to have just a one place that you can... right. settle down, basically.
Yeah, after, you know, performing so many years at the Sandcastle, we knew that we wanted to have our own theater. And it's been a dream and an aspiration of mine for as long as I could remember. Mm-hmm. So getting back to your original question, how did we get to St. Petersburg?
Yeah.
So we knew that we were going to leave Sandcastle. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been 13 years. Our son was turning 3 years old. We just wanted to get closer to home.
Sure.
So we were talking to the CEO, and we said, you know, it's almost time for us to leave at the end of our contract. And he really wanted us to stay. And he said, take a break. You know, just go on vacation. Take as much time as you want, mm-hmm. you know, and then come back. So we took a six-month sabbatical. We bought a 34-foot RV. We traveled East Coast, West Coast, everywhere in between, looking at tourist destinations,
okay.
trying to find where...
You weren't performing. You were just kind of going as tourists.
100% vacation.
Around the country.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we happened to be in Key West, mm-hmm. and we were driving back up north, and we passed through St. Petersburg. And we looked around, and we went, wow, this is such a vibrant arts community.
Yeah, it is.
It's very LGBT-friendly. Mm-hmm. The weather's great. There's plenty of tourism, no competition. It kind
Near
of
the
checked
beach.
All of the boxes.
Keep the sand
for
in
us.
Your toes.
Yes, absolutely. No Michigan winters, so
yeah.
it was
yeah.
perfect.
Yeah.
So we just set our sights on St. Petersburg and went back to Guam. Pandemic hit, closed the show, and we moved right here.
Timing is perfect.
It was perfect.
Which gave you time over the last couple of years to start to develop this theater, I guess, because I guess some businesses have been closed during this time.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
so this was vacant for you to kind of gut and...
This was. So this used to be an old AAA call center. So when we first took it over, it was literally a bare concrete floor. There was nothing in here. Hmm. So Ryan and I, we'd looked at, about 13 different locations. And, you know, there's rarely an empty theater
yeah.
that's available for sale or for lease.
Yeah.
So we came in here and we took some of Oliver's sidewalk chalk. And I remember
your son's name's Oliver, by the way.
Yes, yeah, our son Oliver. And so we would
kid.
We went around. Thank you. We went around and just kind of chalked out. Okay, this is kind of where the stage is going to be. This mm-hmm. is where the box office and concessions are going to be. This will audience backstage, and just kind of envisioned what this space would look like.
Yeah. And once you did, I think it's not only a great and perfect venue as far as the intimacy of the stage and the distance between you and the audience, they get to see big illusions that are right there, which will kind of remind me going back what we were talking about in Macau with Ferran Tirari, where he's doing large illusions in right just feet away from people,
right?
Which is what you're doing then as well. I mean, with the slicer and the origami and compressed and everything else. I mean, you're doing some big stuff.
Yeah, we
I
have
mean,
a passion.
I'm sitting here, you know, we're in the theater right now, and the front row is to the stage is maybe, 4 feet, 5 feet?
It's very intimate.
Very.
So we're passionate about grand illusions. We call ourselves illusionists. Mm-hmm. We also like the classics of magic.
Yeah.
But going from a 500-seat dinner theater to a 90-seat intimate theater where we're now speaking English
I was about to
throughout
ask you about
the show,
that. Yeah,
it was quite a leap for us, but we knew we still wanted to present grand scale illusion in an intimate theater.
Yeah,
and the post-show surveys definitely show we made the right decision because the audience says, I've seen this on TV, I've seen this on a cruise ship, I've seen this in Vegas, but I feel like it's in my living room. I'm literally watching it a few feet away.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I had posted something then on Facebook, and Steve Chesday, who is an illusionist in Chicago, and he works the stage crew with Abbott's Get Together, mm-hmm. and he was saying, it's amazing to have this size illusion on that small of a stage. I said, you would know, and he said, yeah, I do. So, I mean, people can appreciate that. Have you ever seen Ray Anderson's show, The Esther's Follies?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just look at this stuff. Eclipse on the stage. It's right there. They got the flies, and doing water levitation. I mean, right there. It's just amazing. I think people can appreciate that even more when they are close-up seeing illusion.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, what about talking? You said that you had to make that transition then as well because you were doing a silent act before, and so you had to not only retool the illusions and script this out as far as, because you didn't have the 20 dancers now, you just got the one Anastasia lady who's mm-hmm. a wonderful dancer who works with you here. We'll get to that, and also your lighting and music. It's incredible how you do that all in one out of your pocket. But also the fact that you were not speaking, so you had to script something to write. And so was that a difficult transition?
It was. I mean, we hadn't done that for 13 years. So sitting down to actually script something was very new to us. And we were out of sorts with that for a little bit. But it was fun. And I think what it came down to is just being ourselves on stage. And mm-hmm. I mean, you saw the show, so you can kind of attest to it. But I think we just, instead of trying to like write a script, some routines we just went out there and we're like, let's just get through it. And like, I think mm-hmm. that we've developed, you know, our rapport with each other. Obviously, we've been together for 16 years. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we just kind of banter back and forth. And I enjoy trying new things every night, you know, just little tidbits or jokes or sayings and just seeing how the audience reacts. So I think that's something that we've really enjoyed. And just you're so close that we can hear their feedback. You can hear when they laugh, they chuckle, what, anything they say, which, again, was so different from our overseas contract because, you know, it was a big proscenium stage. Everyone's so far away and we didn't speak the same language. So,
yeah, and you can't see beyond the first few rows.
Right.
And you don't really have big spots here. So let me ask, from the stage, typically a spot's in your eyes and you can't see beyond the first row. Can you see pretty much a lot of reactions of people?
Sometimes. It depends
because
on what part of the
just
show.
Just four rows, basically. It looks like about, what, 30 across or 20, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's long and narrow, I guess, as far as the venue here.
It is, yeah. There's certain parts in the show where we deliberately bring up the house lights just so we can see the audience and feel like we have that connection more.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the room in the back and moving illusions in and out.
What
and,
room? There's no room back
exactly.
there.
Exactly. When you showed me back there, I thought, oh my goodness, you know, this just looks like something from Le Grand David show, if you've seen that, you know, Marco the Magnificent when he was in Beverly, Massachusetts, about how that they would fly these things in and out. And the same thing also then with Esther's. No wings over there. Mm-hmm. And they're moving things in and out. And it's incredible. Same thing here. You guys have really made use of some small space.
Yeah, you know, we had to sacrifice some backstage space. You know, this is, it's not glamorous. We have no dressing room here. Mm-hmm. In Guam, we had a dressing room with a bathroom, a shower, a couch that pulled out into a bed, a TV. I mean, it was an apartment. We, in fact, stayed there a couple of times when the power would go out. So, but here we have no dressing room. It's very intimate backstage, but we had to sacrifice the backstage space because we wanted to have more seats out here in the audience. We have a back wall there that goes into another suite next door to us. So there was no room for expansion, unfortunately, there. Above us, there are offices. So there was no, our height, this is what we get.
And you cannot expand beyond this.
We cannot expand, unfortunately. So, but we use it to, and we work with it to our advantage. Mm-hmm. It's a whole game of Tetris backstage. It's a whole nother show. It's amazing to see how all of that, and let me point out, too, we don't have a stage crew.
Well, that was what I was about to say. Anastasia, who is back there, when I was seeing the curtains were closed, and I thought, who's back there going to move this stuff? And then the next thing, you've got stuff all in there, and I thought, okay, she must have been doing that. And I know you don't have any room back there. And then you got the other gentleman up front who is doing concessions, and he's not going to leave the cash register over there. So
there's just four of us.
Four of you.
Four of us. It's Ryan and I, and then Annalise.
Annalise,
and our front of house manager. So yeah, it's a very small, intimate team. Mm-hmm. We did that deliberately to cut down on overhead, but the show is completely automated. Mm-hmm. Ryan has done a fantastic job with all of the audio and technical effects in the show. Mm-hmm. And when one of us is not on stage performing, we're backstage, you know, schlepping illusions and reorganizing and getting ready for the next.
Well, it does that, you know, bring me to that point then, Ryan. So you're the one who kind of has, you're the technical wizard, I guess.
That's right, yeah.
Put all this together. Tell me how that came about. I mean, how do you operate that out of your pockets? I mean, when you're doing the Firefly thing and Chris and other kinds of things that are happening in the sound, and so you cut yours and all, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I went to Michigan State University. Well, first I was a chemical physics major, and then after a semester, I was like, this isn't going to be, I don't think I'll be happy doing this stuff. And so I switched to theater, technical theater mainly, with an emphasis on lighting design. So I gained a lot of knowledge, obviously, going to school and just picking it up, you know, at Sandcastle, both Saipan and Guam. I had programmed the lighting.
Oh, you did that for them, too.
Yeah, so just learned as I go and hands-on. So we run the show on QLab, which I'm sure many people are familiar with, and also Media Monkey audio wave remotes, so we have those in our pockets sometimes. Right. And like Chris said, it's just him, myself.
Was that trial and error getting to the right one? I mean, I've used audio ape and some others as well and whatnot. Is there one you recommend that you kind of have played with? Did you, without saying the ones you don't like, which ones do
it's
you
really
like?
It's really the only one. I mean, I did a lot of research. I tend to do a lot of research on any equipment we get, and so it just seemed like it was kind of the best of the best in the industry. And Charles Pichock is great in Orlando, and so we went over and visited him.
I didn't know he lived over so close.
Yeah, so we just got our pro remote about 3-4 weeks ago, and have been running that for the show, and it's been great and flawless. So, yeah, it's been wonderful. But it does everything. QLab, you know, mutes our mics, does the video on the screens. We have, you can see there's three projectors up there. We are projection mapping the entire theater, all of the walls. So we'll be like during Firefly, we can project, you know, a moon and grass and scenes onto all the walls. So QLab, we actually have two computers running QLab, and they fire each other. So we project the walls, the microphones, the fog, the haze, the lighting, everything. Yeah, lasers, snow machines.
You use every button on that thing, on the remote, don't you?
I think there's almost 1,000 cues in our show in QLab.
The two of you have got that down.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a few manual cues. Everything kind of runs itself, but there'll be times when we have an audience member on stage. Obviously, the timing can vary.
Yeah.
So there'll be some manual cues, but everything kind of just progresses on its own.
Mm-hmm. I had wondered about that, if there was something that you kind of flip the switch and you know what the timing is going to be. Because, well, obviously, if you're doing some things in music, like when you're doing your Beautiful Dove act, for an example,
that's all timed out, yeah.
Exactly.
And we also have the ability to, something we're doing now, we've been open for almost 6 months, but we're changing the show up because we have a lot of repeat customers. So it really puts the pressure on us to kind of, you know, create some new material and rotate material in the show. So we actually have a few hotkeys on QLab where if we don't have a kid, you know, we press this hotkey and we'll do, you know, duct tape instead of our shoe cleaning machine or things like that. So we kind of change the show up on the fly. We'll watch the audience come in. We have security cameras, so we're kind of just backstage, you know, looking at the audience.
Determine how many kids you have, for an example. If you have a lot, you might do one trick versus another one.
Right, yeah.
Huh. Okay. How do you handle people? I mean, your own security, too. I was going to say people who are hecklers or someone's had been overserved before they come here.
Yeah, so this is a little bit different environment. The Asian audience is very polite, very quiet. The Japanese audience, they love magic, but they're just very calm.
Okay. And do they react? I mean, do they applaud and
they
everything?
They do, but it's a polite reaction.
Okay. Just kind of a golf clap.
Yes.
At Ryan's there.
Okay. The Korean audience is a little bit more loud and boisterous, which is great. It's fun. And then transitioning to now an American audience, it's completely different.
That hoop and holler. Yeah.
Yes. Demographics-wise, we have a lot of the 55-plus communities here in St. Petersburg. Our show's family-friendly, so it's really multi-generational.
But still, you got a lot of retirees who live in this area.
A lot of retirees in the area, we have, right next door, we have a liquor store. Mm-hmm. So that brings in some interesting characters into the lobby from time to time.
That. People just kind of stumbling literally into the lobby.
Correct. Mm. Yep. Central Avenue, a lot of bars and restaurants. We're in the Edge District, and Edge stands for entertainment, galleries, dining, etc., and we have some patrons come in that maybe have had some cocktails before the
before
show. And in fact, our second show ever in this theater, there was a husband and wife that came in, and they were quite inebriated before the show started. Well, the husband left. He had had it with his wife, and he was done. So he took off.
Were they arguing
before
during
the
show? Oh, before the show.
Yeah, okay. Before the show started. So she's sitting in the front row, unbeknownst to us, anything was going to happen. And she just starts booing during the middle of the show. And then she calms down a little bit. And then we're doing a bit on stage. Ryan and I are both on stage talking. And I happen to look over at Ryan while I'm talking. And she gets up out of her seat, and she charges after me.
What?
It goes to push me. She falls down, almost hits that intelligent light over there.
Yeah.
So I pick her up. And I say, ma'am, you know, you need to sit back in your seat.
The light was more intelligent than her.
That's right. And then she comes back at me and two hands on my throat.
Oh, my gosh.
Two military guys, ex-military guys in the audience.
In the audience?
Came, picked her up, and hauled her outside.
Holy cow.
And said, you have, you know, two options. You get walking or the police department, which is on the other side of us. We have the liquor store here and the police department on this side.
Oh, handy. And Maddie show sandwich in between.
So she takes off down the street. Hmm. The show ends.
Now, is she like a young 20s, 30s?
Oh,
or
no. She's
50s?
Mid 40s.
Well, okay. Should have known better.
Come to find out, after looking at her ticket reservation, she is a middle school teacher. Yes.
Okay, she was really letting go that night.
She was telling my front of house staff after the show, she wanted to let the audience know it wasn't real magic. Okay. Well, like clockwork, show ends, her husband shows up at the front door. I'm here to pick up my wife. Well, your wife took off down the street.
You might check the cop shop next
door.
Yeah.
And we said, what had happened? And he said, just nonchalantly, okay.
Like
this happens all the time. Mm. It was insane. So I had a little PTSD from that because it was going from a very polite audience to now dealing with hecklers or drunk individuals.
Yeah. Well, that is an unusual situation. I've not had anyone tell me a story like that before. I mean, I've heard of hecklers and everything, but something not where you got a couple of military guys actually picking her up and hauling her out there, too. Wow. I have heard people talk about the differences in audiences among countries and even among states. I think I've heard it said you can tell there's an audience in Minnesota because they cast a shadow. Because they're very quiet in general. And it's different places that way they react. But in general, you're right. I think American audiences tend to almost overreact where they're, again, whooping and hollering and thinking. I mean, we watch a David Blaine show or something where they say, oh, look at that. I can't believe that. They're, you know, of course, they're in front of a television camera and they know the cameras are on, whether it's going to be TikTok or NBC. They just think, hey, I'm getting some notoriety here, you know.
What we've noticed here in an intimate theater, sometimes you forget that there's an audience around you, and so you start conversing with us on stage, and they feel like they can be a part of
because
the show.
Because it is so intimate.
Because it's so intimate.
I hadn't thought about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, regardless, because, again, you only are four rows deep, although they're long. Mm-hmm. Even the back row, you're only 30 feet or so from the audience.
That's very easy to talk to us.
Yeah, so, so almost like a close-up show.
It works in both ways. You know, sometimes that's really
great. To your advantage and not, yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you shut that down pretty quickly, or do you answer the question then move on quickly?
I'm going to be honest. I'm not very good with hecklers. Because for my career, I've never had to deal with them. You know, there are some magicians that are very polished that could, you know, shut that down very
Jeff
quickly.
Jeff Hobson or some people.
Perfect example, yes. Mm-hmm. But I'm learning quickly.
Well, having just worked silently for so many years and then being thrust into this where, as you say, people are going to be talking back and forth. Well, another thing, have you thought about doing close-up on stage? Since it is an intimate theater.
See, I don't have close-up chops.
Okay.
I love watching close-up, but it's not my passion.
Ryan, how about you?
Also do not, no.
You're not a card or coin guy.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, it's a good idea not to, if you're not, to try to go into that. I mean, stay in your own wheelhouse. You know?
That's right.
I just wondered if people, whenever, as an illusionist, you know, we always as magicians are out and say, oh, you're a magician, and, you know, show me something. Mm-hmm. Do you have a go-to thing? Or it's like, well, let me pull out my doves or let me get my illusion. I mean, I always wondered about what illusionists do when you're faced with that question.
Yeah.
That's a question for both of you guys. I'm just curious what you do.
Yeah. You know,
how you respond?
When I was younger, I used to carry, you know, a trick on me.
Everybody
wherever
did.
I'd go. But since being overseas and performing, we're doing two shows a night, 5 to 6 nights a week. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot of performing.
But they recognize you every place you go as a magician.
Absolutely.
That's
my
point. And it's like, hey, you're the guys over at the place.
Sandcastle. So. Yeah, absolutely. Especially on the islands because they're so small. Mm. We're very easy to spot out there. So we'd be out to dinner and, you know, people would come up. And
would they, aside from wanting to take pictures, would they ask you to do something?
No, usually it's just take a photo autograph. It was fun. You know, it was a unique experience. But we don't get that too much here. I mean, once in a while. People ask, but we're not usually at the ready. And kind of an interesting story, I'll get into this here. A lot of the organizations in the area are asking, hey, will you come to our event? Will you come to our festival and perform?
Right.
Help you know, do a little something, promote the show. And we don't do that. And here's why. This environment that we have in here, in our theater, we have created. So we have control of all of the elements and all of the lighting. If we go outside and we perform, it's going to be, in my opinion, subpar. It's not going to be
a false representation of our product.
Right.
You go off brand a little bit, too.
I want people to experience the magic in our theater the way that we intend it to be.
So you don't even do television spots?
We've done television interviews, but they've all been in
all
here.
All been here? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Go ahead, Ryan.
Virtual ones lately too, with the whole COVID thing. They'll send us just a cameraman, and we'll be virtually talking to the host in the studio while we're here. So we've done a lot of those recently.
Oh, remote types of shows and things. Do you do magic then here on the stage?
That? Yes, we will. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Where you have actually created a magic environment, and magic doesn't happen outside this environment, basically.
Yeah, I'd rather people come here and get the full experience. It's really it's an experience from the moment that our patrons walk in the door until they see the show until they leave. It's a complete experience.
Yeah, and then as they're leaving, of course, they can get the shots with you. I mean, go out and take selfies with
you. Yeah, we do meet and greets out in the lobby. Mm-hmm. We have an Instagram wall, the big Z with the purple glitter sequins behind that. We have magic sets for sale.
Was it a concerted effort for you not to get a liquor license? I mean, in other words, we're talking talking about drunks and people, and you only got a finite amount of time and everything. Sure. You probably don't want people getting up and walking out to get another drink to come back in during the show. So did you decide not to get a liquor license, or are you waiting to get one, or what's your
I'll tell you what, anybody that's looking at building a magic theater of their own, it is a whole process. Mm-hmm. From the fire department, getting all of our permits passed, to the food and beverage, the health department. So basically, we wanted to have a popcorn machine out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fresh popcorn, smells good,
right.
Sell more.
Right, right.
So in order to do that, we needed to have a three-compartment hand-washing sink
to sterilize. Or for the employees who are making it.
The popcorn scoop. To clean the popcorn scoop, we needed a three-compartment sink.
Okay.
Where we're going to put that?
Yeah.
So it was going to cost us, I think it was going to be like $5,000 to run a line out there, but we don't have any space mm-hmm. for a three-compartment sink out there.
Right. Yeah, your lobby is probably only about, what, 20 by 10?
The whole space here is 2,600 square feet.
Okay.
Not including the bathrooms.
Okay.
So it's very intimate. So we said, okay, well, we're not going to be able to do that. Then let's do the liquor license. Well, that was a whole another ball of wax. So mm-hmm. what we have is basically we're considered a bar lounge, but it's grab and go only. So we can serve beer and wine and some other mixed drinks that are up to a certain percentage of alcohol.
Okay, sure. Hmm.
But we are not allowed to open the cans and hand it to them. We just have to hand them the can and they grab it and go.
Okay.
Same thing. Any of the popcorn has to be heat sealed, which we have made fresh every day for the show. So it mm-hmm. is, it's a fantastic local
But you don't
popcorn.
Get to smell the popcorn.
You don't get to smell it. We have toyed around with putting a scent machine out there with the popcorn.
Yep, that was what I was going to suggest.
Yep, mm-hmm. and doing that. But so far, sales for the concessions, it hasn't faltered any, so we're okay with it the way that
I'm surprised you don't have a lot of back-of-the-room sales stuff. I mean,
so we're looking at getting some more swag. We get a lot of people asking. St. Pete is all about stickers. They love their stickers.
Yeah.
Branded shirts as well. We have the branded magic sets. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so we want to add some of that. But again, space.
Space, finite room. It's kind of like you almost have to have a picture of that as opposed to you can't really put it on the wall. I mean, you want to keep the brand, keeping it look clean and not cluttered and everything. So,
Really it's a very sophisticated environment. Yes. We want to make sure we keep that way.
It's a fine balance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to circle way back to going back to Guam again and talking about Rick Wilcox because I know he was, as I mentioned, working with big cats. And you mentioned cats and we went on. Did you work with tigers or just lion or just tigers or have lions? What kind of?
Just tigers.
Okay.
Yep. We had a white Bengal tiger and orange Bengal tigers.
Okay. And did you have a handler who did that?
Yes. Okay. There was a dedicated animal handler that also took care of the birds. We had a chicken in the show. We did this routine with a catapult and catapulted a chicken into like a duck bucket type of thing. Mm-hmm. So he took care of all the animals and obviously kept the birds separated from the tigers.
Right. Was he employed then by the Sandcastle?
He was.
Okay, I wonder if he was the same guy that worked for Rick and the other guys. I mean, in other words, if they had kind of interchangeable magicians, but they had the same guy that stayed with the animals. Or did the animals stay there, obviously? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the magic community is small, but the animal handling community is really small. So all these tiger trainers and the circus folk all know each other. And I mean, our animal trainer in Guam, his name was Daryl, was amazing. I mean, he was just great with the animals, and they were so well taken care of. And I know there's a lot of concerns about animals and shows, but I mean they had human grade chicken. I mean they ate better than a lot of people on island did, and he loved them and took them out on walks, and they were great.
When you came, had you been working with wild animals before, or did you? Or was that part of the contract? Said, well, we want you to do that. How'd that work?
Yeah, so Ryan has been doing his bird act forever, but as far as the wild animals go, it was in our contract that we were to work with the tigers. Obviously, we didn't have any tiger illusions, so any of the tiger illusions belong to the Sandcastle, and then the rest of the magic belonged to us.
Okay.
So we owned everything else in the show. And we had to implement the tiger illusions in our routines somewhere. So in Saipan, we had, what, three tigers at one time, and then there were six on Guam.
Wow.
That we had, and then, of course, the birds and the chickens. Working with the tigers was incredible. They are just majestic, beautiful creatures. Mm-hmm. They are wild animals. Now, while Daryl could go into the cages with these tigers, we never did.
Mm-hmm.
we did do, I did a high five with a tiger that was declawed. Now this is, you can't declaw tigers any longer, but this was before. So we did a high five bit with the tiger, but yeah, we never, well, I guess we did, when they were their babies, we got them out. We had walked them when they were babies, we'd walk them out on stage.
I'm sure you probably saw Siegfried and Roy when you were younger, and if you did, you might recall they had their tigers along the side of the wall who weren't part, I say who, they were not part of, they were not in the, that night show, but when you come into the theater, you kind of see the tigers live without bars, basically, that were tied down, I'm sure. Did you have anything like that, or did you? Was it a surprise when the tigers came out? They weren't.
It was
expecting.
A surprise.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a surprise.
And then you walked them back off, I guess. You kept them, or you handed the handler, or
so the ones
Ryan
that appeared inside
off,
of, like, a lion's bride, they would just stay in that illusion and then get wheeled off.
Okay.
The babies, we'd leash walk out and then back off stage.
Did you allow the public to have photos taken with the tigers and you or the handler?
We did not.
Okay.
We did not.
I know some people have done that in the past. And again, talking to Rick, I know there have been issues that he's had. I said rather he'd rather not talk about it, but have you? Did you ever have some incidents?
No, we had zero incidents.
As far as being scratched or bitten?
No,
I mean,
no.
I know Siegfried did too.
I had nightmares, a lot of very realistic nightmares of these tigers getting out. But no, I had full 100% confidence in our trainer that he would keep the entire cast and crew safe, and he did a phenomenal job. Would I work with tigers again? No, it's not a passion of mine. I don't care to. It was a great 13 years working with big cats, but I would, if given the opportunity, I don't think I'd do it again.
So it must have been kind of funny. Again, you were working with a lot in Saipan, and then Guam, there were just a couple. So you kind of scaled down, I guess.
Scaled up.
Okay, you had more in Guam.
Yeah, more in Guam.
I'm sorry, the other way around.
Saipan was a 250-seat dinner theater.
Then you
Guam was a 500-seat dinner theater, so it's a little bit larger machine.
And because they enjoy magic, perhaps different and more in Asia, were they pretty much sold out performances all the time there?
Same thing, seasonality.
Okay.
There was some seasons that were great, some seasons that were slow. But again, we did 5 to 6 nights a week, two shows a night.
Yeah.
It's a lot of magic.
It is a lot of magic. But you're very young and energetic and probably, you know, wired to do it, you know, getting up for that. As you get older, as you say, you do just one show a night here, 4 nights a week?
Depends, 3 to 4, depending on the season. But we're also doing exclusive events. Like, for example, this afternoon we have an exclusive event. So it'll be our full show, but we're just doing it for a private company.
That's what I was going to say. You do rentals for corporate events, and they'll come in with their employees or families or whatever kind of a thing. In that case, do you customize the show to say, okay, well, for Exxon or for AT&T or whoever, that we're going to be doing such and such? You know what I mean? Like a trade show, you might brand something.
Sure.
Did you do that for them?
Yeah. So, for example, we had a 75th birthday, and she wanted to decorate the showroom, which we allowed her to do. Mm-hmm. We had his pictures on a slideshow on the TVs before the show, and of course, he was the star of the show, so we brought him up to participate on stage in a few things. So, yeah, we do some branding and some promotion if we can.
Right. Do you try to promote that a lot? Or, I mean, I don't see that during the show. I mean, that's something I want to recall again in Branson that Rick Thomas had at his intermission. You don't have an intermission, but when he would show on the video saying, hey, if you're interested, you know, contact us and this theater's available or whatever.
You know, it's happened organically for us. Word has got out. Of course, we have some press releases that we talk about it, but during the show, it's not a big pitch. Perhaps that's bad business, but we try not to pitch too much.
We wouldn't have to pitch
show.
It if it's doing it, you know, before and after on the videos. Mm-hmm. People are walking in and sitting down, or are they getting ready to leave while they're standing and looking and saying, "Hey, if you'd like to rent this theater," that would be a very subtle way of doing it without you having to pitch it from the stage.
Yeah, that's great. You know? That's great.
You mentioned during the show about how you two guys had met, in which you were doing the same show, booked at the same show, and you decided, "Hey, we can work together." Is that a fact?
Right.
Does that just sound good?
So, yeah, we were double booked for an event. This is at Michigan State University. It was at the Wharton Center for the Performing Arts, and event coordinators had talked to us individually, and it just double booked us. We showed up to the show, and unbeknownst to each other,
both illusionists,
and instead of a squabble over the limelight, we just put our two acts together. And I thought, wow, this is really
pretty
great.
Powerful. Yeah, because your styles are, I think, very similar. In which, when I'm watching the show, it's almost interchangeable. when you're coming out. I mean, looking back later, if I was not a magician, it might all morph together. I don't remember which guy did the doves or which guy did that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was you both have a very similar personality and character, it seems like, on stage, as opposed to Siegfried's dressed this way and Roy's dressed this way, and they're both have a different and strong personalities of whatever they do, but yours is really more morphed together. Is that an intentional thing? Or?
Right, so there's not a day that goes by that somebody doesn't say, oh, are you guys twins? You guys look very similar. Still, to this day, people call us the Zubrick brothers till they see the show and they realize that that's not.
You're married, yeah.
And that is why in our script we talk about that.
Early on.
Yeah, very early on in the show, which is amazing. And there's not a lot of places that we could perform that we could be so open and authentic like that.
You know, I saw Darren Brown on Broadway, and in the first 5 minutes, that was what he was talking about, just sitting on a stool with a spotlight on him, talking a little bit about his life, saying as he was growing up that this was something that he was gay and didn't want to get it out because he was afraid of what people would think. And once that he did, he realized, well, people don't think about me. You know, it's like, I wonder what people are going to think about me. But once it came out, it's kind of like, they don't think about me. So why was I worried so much?
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be something. As far as how you guys, you guys had gotten together, did your relationship develop as far as beyond friendship?
Fairly soon. It was magic first. It was magic that brought us together.
Yeah, okay.
So that was what developed first, and then it became romantic.
That's great.
Again, that was 16 years ago that we got together. And performing in the Midwest, we were never out and open.
Mm. It'd be hard to. I mean, I'm from the Midwest, and growing up, I mean, of course, I grew up a different generation than you gentlemen. But
sure.
16 years ago, I'm sure it would have been more difficult to
absolutely
discuss that outwardly, particularly during the show.
Yeah, and it's something that you know we don't
flaunt.
We don't flaunt it.
Yeah.
We try to just live authentically and openly. Especially now that we have a son, because we want him to be comfortable in his own skin.
I understand. Tell me about how your son was born.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Where do we start? Let's start at the beginning.
I think it's a great story.
So we decided that we wanted to have a family.
Yeah.
So we went down the open adoption route.
Uh-huh.
It was a lot of paperwork. It was very stressful. And we were just about to jump into the waiting pool to be chosen, hopefully, as parents.
Yeah.
And then we got an email from Ryan's sister, and she said, hey, guys, I have an oven that I'm not using right now. If you guys could use it, you know, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, wow, she must be drinking. We have a perfectly fine working oven here in our place. We don't need that. And then it dawned on us what she was offering us, which we thought was absolutely incredible. She has never had a child before.
And she's single.
She was married.
Married, okay.
So this would be her first child, which would be our child. And then not 2 weeks later, unprompted, a friend of ours came forward and said, I'll donate my eggs to you guys. I know you guys want to start a family.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, everything just kind of came together.
Wow.
So we flew to Santa Monica, California, where Ryan's sister lives with her husband. And we started this process of surrogacy.
Mm-hmm.
So how many eggs did we get to?
23.
We had 23 viable eggs. Mm-hmm. We split those into two separate piles, and Ryan and I both inseminated our own.
Separately.
We have we took one of Ryan's embryos, one of mine, and we put them into his sister.
Okay.
Now, she has no genetic ties. She is simply the oven.
She's the oven.
Right?
Interesting.
We have to explain that to some people.
Yes.
So.
It sounds like, it sounds incestuous.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
So one of them took, one of them did not. We don't know which one. We never found out, and it doesn't matter to us.
No.
So we would Skype with Ryan's sister and the OBGYN from Guam. For the whole process, and then we flew to Santa Monica for Oliver's birth in 2017, and
that was an experience.
Now, what was that experience like, Ryan?
So we had this whole birth plan typed up. You know, we wanted to do skin to skin, and who's cutting the cord,
sure.
And like, this is the big moment. We were so ready. We were scrubbed up, and we're in the room with my sister, and they were starting to induce labor, and all these alarms start going off. Mm-hmm. And of course, all the nurses rush in, and it was super frantic, and everyone was kind of yelling at each other, and they just whisked her away right away. And we were just left there. this is going to get me emotional, but we were just left there standing like, what is going on? Not only concerned for our future child, but also for my sister.
Sure.
So what had happened was she had a placenta abruption. So the placenta separated from the uterine wall, which basically cut Oliver's lifeline, blood, oxygen, like that. Man. So he was without oxygen for, I think, 6 minutes. They, of course, got our OBGYN on the phone. She was driving, drove right to the hospital, threw her keys at some stranger, said, go park my car. She threw everyone out of the elevator, pressed a secret button or something, went right up to the floor, and pulled Oliver out immediately. So
wow.
We weren't there.
Cesarean? Through cesarean?
Yeah. Emergency C-section. So we weren't there for the actual birth. And then they said, you know, because of his lack of oxygen, they felt like it was best to transport him to CHLA, Children's Hospital of Los Angeles.
To a NICU.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so he went by ambulance, and only one person could go. So I went with him, and Chris followed behind. Of course, you know, arrived about an hour later because we were in L.A., we went lights and siren, and obviously Chris couldn't. So when I arrived at the Children's Hospital, one of the doctors sat me down. And again, like so many emotions at, at one time. And the doctor said, you know, because of his lack of oxygen, he will probably never be able to walk. He might not be able to feed himself. There was like 12 things. And those are the only two that I remember. And I was just...
devastated.
Yeah, but like emotionally and mentally, like... I don't even know. So Chris eventually showed up, and we ended up staying there with him for, what, 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. They had this cooling therapy. Basically, he was just in a diaper laying on this cooling pad, and they kept him at a certain temperature. And so he would just lay there and shiver, and we couldn't touch him or pick him
up.
Was
he underweight also, or is it about full term?
Full term, yeah.
Okay.
Because we had it all scheduled. We had picked a date, and they were inducing labor, and then at the last minute, this all kind of went down. So we couldn't even hold him. He just laid there and shivered. And we went through the process and brain scans and everything, and, I mean, he's a perfectly healthy boy. And, yeah.
Well, the pictures that you showed them on the monitor as you were kind of telling your life story a little bit during the show, the curly hair, I mean, perfect American young boy.
He's beautiful. A great boy. And unfortunately, the night that you saw our performance, he was not in the show, but he does appear in the show from
time to
time.
You make him appear or does he walk out?
He appears. So at the end of our show, we have an appearing helicopter.
Yeah.
So he appears inside of
in
the appearing helicopter.
Now he's 4 now?
He's 4 years old now. Okay. Uh-huh. I think by next year, he's going to have his own routine that he'll do by himself. He loves to be on stage.
Does he?
He loves to be in front of an audience.
So when he's in the helicopter, he's waving at everybody, having a great time.
Yes, he is. He's wonderful. And then during the wintertime, when we did snowstorm, he ran out and spun in the snow with me. So that was kind of a special moment.
That is fun, yeah. And I think that's got to, you know, just bring the audience to their feet, I would think, because you're talking about perhaps the first time you'd experienced snow, and then here's your son coming out. And
he steals the show, really.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah. He's the star, which is great.
You want to keep him at that age, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's so much fun. Well, now, again, you're really not going out or going into other places, you know, you don't need to because this is, say, where the magic happens. Is there a long-term plan or something that you're looking, let's say, down the road, 5-10 years from now? I mean, what's the goal of what you kind
sure.
of want to do?
If we could expand, whether it's in this space or a different theater, we'd like to do that. St. Pete is growing so quickly, and properties are quite expensive. It's the gentrification that's happening. It's now moving from off of Central, coming our direction. Mm-hmm. So we've got...
You'll soon be in the very middle of it then.
Oh, very, very soon. Yeah, mm-hmm. there's hotels and condominiums going up. It's just going to double in size mm-hmm. here very, very quickly. So long-term plan, we're going to be here. This is our forever home now.
Yeah. St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg.
Maybe not this building, but...
Correct.
Here, right.
But, you know, if we do stay here, it's great. It's mm-hmm. an intimate theater, so we can always add shows. Now, this might sound weird to your listeners, but for Ryan and I, we don't care about the fame, and we're certainly not here for the fortune. Mm-hmm. We created a lifestyle business. Our main goal is to be able to do what we love, which is perform, mm-hmm. but it's our family. And we love to travel. We love to spend time with Oliver at the theme parks in Orlando. So we'll do as many shows as we want. And the rest of the time, we're just going to
enjoy. And you really feel like you're part of the community and vice versa. They feel like you're part of
this community.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful place.
Well, the show itself, for those who haven't seen this yet, again, is kind of a, as you said, a Las Vegas extravaganza in which you were actually wearing glitzy jackets and you change clothes and everything and you kind of tag team back and forth. I was wondering coming in if it was going to be a lot different as far as your personalities. But again, the way you work together, for an example, I think the Cuba Libre routine is the best of any Cuba Libre I've seen.
Oh, thank
Usually
you.
It's just one person who's doing that and you're explaining that. But when you have yourself across the stage, one is like 10 feet away from the other and they're changing back and forth and the way you're explaining that, the presentation, the scripting, the way that it changes, I just think that's the best that I'd seen.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a personality piece. It's mm-hmm. it's up at the top of the show, so the yeah. audience gets to know us, gets to know our personality. And it's a really amazing trick. It's a great mm-hmm. effect.
Oh, it is. So. Yeah, just in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But if, again, usually it's done just by one person, but the fact, that's what I'm saying, when two people are doing it like this, that works perfectly. Do you seek out those kinds of effects where two people can...
We try. There are other effects, like origami, for example.
Yeah, that looked, you two guys worked great with that.
It works great with two people. We've worked with Joni Spina, mm-hmm. and she said, you know, look, it's really better performed with just one magician. So there are some routines where we try to fit
and
the both of us in.
And you've been doing it that
in.
Long?
Yeah.
Bless her soul.
Yes.
Wow, what a wonderful
yes.
woman. Yeah.
So it's sometimes challenging to find illusions. Like Slicer, for example, is great with two magicians because we can both pull it apart.
Perfect.
You've got all those blades to put in, so mm-hmm. it goes a lot faster. Same thing with Cuba Libre.
Exactly.
If it's one magician, it takes a while to get through it. So we can speed things up a little bit when there's two of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it again, I think flows well from that standpoint, and it's a quick hour. And have you made it, like when you were in Guam and Saipan, were they 90-minute shows, or how long was that, a 60-minute show, or how long was that?
Yeah, it was just an hour-long show.
Okay, so have you thought about going longer? You feel like that's kind of
so we're at 70
time?
Minutes. We're at 70 minutes 70. In here right now. Okay. Anything less than, I think, is I think we're at the sweet spot right now where our audience, at least mm-hmm. our surveys are coming back saying the show is not too short, it's not too long, it's just perfect.
Yeah. Another thing I was thinking as I left the other night would be a gypsy rope tie for the two of you.
Oh, yeah.
Would work out great.
It's a great suggestion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it would, again, use the two of you and you have somebody else in the audience come up and it's an audience participation kind of a thing and it's a great reaction, you know, kind of a trick.
Absolutely.
You know, and because you are of a smaller frame than Chris is, you know, you'd be the one wearing a jacket of whatever gentleman. And, of course, since it is a tourist town, a lot of times people are not wearing a jacket. You can have a jacket, as you know, just have mm-hmm. it available to say, hey, you know, would you mind putting this on, sir? You know, and you have some jokes. Anyhow, kind of getting aside over there with my consulting suggestions. I assume you've had a lot of people who have given you some outside suggestions.
You know, the amount of magicians that have come through these doors in the past 6 months has been astounding. Now, maybe that's because we were on an island for 13 years and
yeah.
Magicians and didn't take
anybody,
a 24-hour
yeah.
flight to come see the show.
Right.
It's been incredible how many magicians have come through this door.
Yeah, and what have been their responses?
It's all been positive, mm-hmm. Very, very warm. We have some magicians that have given us some of their critiques and suggestions, and those are wonderful too because we can't always sit out in the audience and watch mm-hmm. ourselves perform.
Sure.
I mean, we do videotape the show every single night, mm-hmm. and we do go back and watch those, but it's great to have some eyes and ears out in the audience to help.
Yeah, yeah. That is really good to hear that both of you guys do video this and you'll go back and critique yourselves. I have had so many conversations, particularly of late, with different people. It kind of goes back to, I remember, part-time professional act, the lecture that was by Gene Anderson talking about audio recording on cassette recorders of your act and then listening to it later. Well, of course, now, and then video cameras came out, and now, of course, your phone, you could do it easily enough. And the way you got the theater made, you can record these the way you want as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important for magicians, and I'm just telling people who are listening to this, whether you're doing a stage show or a close-up show to, or a corporate show or stand-up, whatever, to record those just for yourself, to go back and look at that and see how you can fine-tune or tweak that. And also sometimes you may not feel good about the show you did, but then you realize, oh, that was pretty good. And then you watch it again. That was darn good. You know, and
it's
then,
a great
wow,
tool.
Yes, yeah, it's a great tool. So you go back and do you look at the next day? I mean, at night you got to go back home to Oliver, but I mean, do you then just look at the next day or before the next night? And
Yeah, usually, you know, we'll after we get Oliver to bed and have dinner, we'll sit down and we'll review the tape.
Oh, you do even?
And we'll discuss things. That way we can come in the next morning after Oliver goes to school, and mm-hmm. we can start to re-routine some things or tweak some lights or some audio mm-hmm. and get ready for the next show.
Do you have a babysitter or a relative or someone who lives in town? Or who?
So we don't have any relatives that live here in St. Petersburg, okay. So we have a babysitter that comes over. And so we give Oliver the choice. Hey, do you want to go and perform with, he calls us Daddy and Papa. I'm Papa, mm-hmm. Ryan's Daddy.
Okay.
So do you want to go perform with Daddy and Papa tonight, or do you want to stay home and, you know, do arts and crafts with your babysitter?
Yeah.
We give him the choice. We never want to force him into the show if he doesn't want to do it.
Just like a cat. Just like a wild cat.
And it's been great. Having him backstage, now he's starting to want to do more backstage things. So mm-hmm. he wants to open the curtain, or we'll bring him in.
Put him on payroll soon.
Yeah, he's got to earn his keep. Yeah. He comes in, he tests the microphones, he turns on the TVs for us. He can do it pretty much verbatim. He'll put away all of the props and stuff after the show.
That's
he knows
right.
where everything goes. So
yeah.
It's fun.
Getting him trained in theater early.
Yes.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have 11-year-old twins, and they're getting into theater, and one was starring in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, you know, recently at school. And then after that, her sister was in the chorus kind of behind, so there was another play coming, and so they were going to kind of switch positions. But the one who was a star said, you know, this time I'd rather work with the sound, the lights, and the curtains.
Oh,
kind
that's
of,
great.
She wants to learn the backstage of that. And I think that's great. You kind of don't just want to be in the limelight, or you don't want to just be working in the props department, but you kind of learn everything because there's so much to learn in theater.
Are they identical twins?
They are fraternal twins.
Okay. I was going to say, we need to, might have an act.
You know, that's funny. When they were born, Steve Daly had said that early on when I'd posted a picture after that. He said, I got dibs on these twins. Beautiful little girls. Well, listen, guys, you have been fantastic, and it's been great getting a chance to spend more time with you and to see the show, and I wish you nothing but the best of luck here on out.
Well, thank you so much for having us on your podcast and for coming and being in our audience. We really appreciate it.
So my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast, and I always like to ask my guests, what is your, not necessarily your word, I don't mean like abracadabra, what is your magic phrase or philosophy? It could be a sentence or...
At the end of the show.
Yeah, so if anybody wants to learn more about us, first of all, let's do a plug.
Yeah, please plug.
Let's
I always
plug
forget
away.
That. Like, please.
Go to ZubrickMagic.com, Z-U-B as in boy, R-I-C-K, magic.com. You can follow all of us on Instagram and Facebook as well, at ZubrickMagic. And right now, our current show schedule is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and an occasional Sunday matinee show. Looking to add some more shows later on as well. Mm-hmm. So keep stay tuned to see about that. And then at the end of the show, we finish every show with this. While the audience is applauding, we say, if you can be anything, be kind. And we just leave them with that.
So be kind.
Just be kind.
That's your philosophy for both of you guys. That makes sense. Yeah, to just be kind. And
it's just that simple.
Dealing with customer service, because we're doing it all. We're cleaning the seats, we're answering the phone calls, we're booking the tickets. So, you know, sometimes we'll run into customers that are just unkind.
Less than kind.
Yeah, it really resonates with us now.
So your advice, again, is be kind. Well, thank you again very much, guys. So that was Chris and Ryan Zubrick, and from the Zubrick Theater here in St. Pete, this is Scotty out. Thank you, Ryan and Chris, for everything you do, and especially for having a few moments you could sit down with me to talk about your theater and your lives and your history, and it was great. I know the rest of you listeners have enjoyed this as much as I have as well. And if you get a chance to get down to St. Petersburg, please be sure and check out their show. It really is Las Vegas of the East Coast. It is a tremendous show in an intimate environment, and they are just killing it at every opportunity they can to perform. So get down there and check it out. Well, I told you at the beginning we were going to tell you a little information on the back end here about our contest. Thanks to Charlie Randall from H&R Magic Books. He has republished the book called Seventh Heaven by Lewis Jones, and he has offered 6 copies of this book, that's hard copies of the book, to 6 lucky listeners. So
Go to themagicwordpodcast.com for this week's episode, and there you will see a form where you can complete with your name and email address, and that will populate a spreadsheet. And when the contest is over in 3 weeks, we will randomly select six lucky listeners, and you will be notified and requested to give your physical address so Charlie can send out to those copies. Let me mention, this is open to the world, wherever contests are legal like this to win contests, I guess. Anyhow, if you are outside the U.S. or its territories, then Charlie will ask you to reimburse him for whatever the foreign postage charges will be. You can then elect either to pay reimburse him for that or say no, thank you, and then which case we will then have a random drawing for someone to replace you. So it is open to everyone, but please know, again, outside the U.S., there will be a charge for postage. Within the U.S., domestic postage is free, compliments again of Charlie. So thank you very much, Charlie Randall, for making this possible for the listeners here. He has been just a great friend of the Magic Word, and we appreciate that. Well, I think it's time to wrap this up because we've got some exciting guests coming up, I know, in further weeks. If you have not already subscribed to the Pod Letter, please go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you probably will see a little pop-up that will say subscribe to the Pod Letter, and that will let you know from week to week who we have on that week, who we are going to be having coming up the next week, and also some suggestion from the archives. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, if you can be anything, be kind. This is Scotty out.